Thank you for listening to Mormon Sex Info. This episode is an archived episode and is only now becoming publicly available. Mormon Sex Info relies on contributions. To contribute, please visit mormonsex.info. And now, please enjoy this episode.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Mormon Sex Info. This is Natasha Helfer Parker, and today I'm really excited to bring on the show a couple who is willing to share with us their story about how they dealt with a pornography disclosure and some of those issues that have to do with marital discomfort or marital distress when that happens, and some of the messaging that they got throughout their Mormon history about it and how that impacted many things and how they got to a place where they feel much more comfortable and safer and secure in their relationship throughout that whole ordeal. And since we've done several programs on the issues with pornography addiction and how that's often misnamed and treated incorrectly for a lot of people, I thought it'd be really important to bring on an actual couple that is living through many of the things that have been discussed by professionals. So welcome to the show, Ben and Jen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. I think it's always super commendable when people are willing to share the vulnerabilities of their own lives. And I know your hope in doing so is to help others. So it's very much appreciated. And I'd like to give you both an opportunity to just briefly introduce yourselves. Tell us about each of you and maybe even a bit about your Mormon background. Like, how did you grow up Mormon?
I was raised in the church. My parents were very active. My grandfather was a general authority. My father served in bishoprics all during my life growing up. And we were very devout in our, we had morning scripture study and family home evening on Monday nights. Never missed a Sunday. When we traveled, we didn't go out to eat or do anything on Sunday, except, and we would find a ward to attend wherever we were traveling. We were what I call competitively LDS. We were very, very Mormon. I served a mission in Omaha, Nebraska at the Winter Quarters Visitor Center. We were married a couple of years after I got back from my mission, maybe even just 1 year. And then we have 4 kids. And
we're down to 4.
And we're down to 4. We're very, very Mormon.
Okay. All right. So met your husband soon after your mission and married soon thereafter. Sounds like.
We met in junior high. I moved into his ward in 7th grade, actually. And I wrote in my 8th grade journal that I was going to marry him. So.
Wow. That's exciting.
I had a big crush on him right from the get-go.
But after we tried the dating thing in high school for just a couple weeks, we went our separate ways and didn't really talk for a few years. So not exactly the typical high school sweetheart story, but came full circle eventually.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really neat. That's cool. All right, Ben, what about you?
Also born and raised LDS, pioneer ancestry. My family wasn't quite as competitive maybe in the LDS church. They were always very TBM. We attended church every Sunday, and we tried to do family home evening, but we were not the type that woke up at 5 a.m. to do a scripture study before getting the day going. My parents still remain active LDS, and in contrast to some of the more check-every-single-box LDS families, we were raised with maybe a slightly more broad perspective or open mind as it related to people choosing things that didn't fit the LDS paradigm. Served my mission in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and yeah, here we are.
Okay. And just to clarify for anybody who might be listening who doesn't totally know all the Mormon jargon, TBM stands for True Believing Mormon, which is kind of an acronym that's thrown out there for people who are pretty devout and believing members of the church. All right. And as far as education or careers or anything like that, you want to share anything about other things you've done?
Sure. Yeah. I went to BYU and completed 3 years of my undergrad. Ben was at Utah State getting his degree. And when we got married, I focus more on getting him through school. I never did finish. I still have like 13 credit hours before I get my degree, which hurts. But
she helped me finish. She wrote my last couple papers. I was so burned out on school.
What did you study, Jen?
It was marriage, family, human development.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so that's one of my goals long term, is to go back and finish that up and pursue some kind of career. But and then Ben can tell his...
Well, and you still work from home.
Oh, yeah. I still... I worked while he was getting his ratings to become a pilot, and eventually ended up doing medical transcription. So I work from home transcribing currently, and that's what I've done for the last 8 years.
Okay. And so, Ben, you're a pilot?
Correct, yeah. I got a degree, a bachelor's just in liberal arts, but... Yeah, I worked my way up the ladder, and I'm a commercial airline pilot now.
All right. Well, great. Thank you. So why don't we start by just talking a little bit about each of your individual experiences with pornography prior to ever meeting each other. So what was maybe the introduction to pornography, and along with that, what were the messages that you were receiving about pornography, either from family, church, or other environmental areas in your life?
So I was introduced to pornography when I was, I think it was around 9 years old. I had a neighbor, there was a family that lived next door, and they were not LDS, not that that really matters, but the girl that was my age that I was good friends with, that her parents had some magazines and things under their bed that she knew about, and when they were not home, she showed them to me. And that was my first introduction to sex and pornography. And it came as a shock, but there was a lot of curiosity there. So I, you know, looked at it with her and enjoyed it, I think, on some level because of the curiosity and the learning. And then shortly thereafter, the shame set in, and I didn't feel like I could talk to my parents about it because I knew on some level that what I'd done was wrong. And so I just harbored this guilt from that experience for the next several years until I wanted to get my patriarchal blessing. And I remember going to talk to my parents because I really wanted my patriarchal blessing. And this was when I was, I believe it was 13 or 14 years old. And I didn't feel like I could get it until I'd gotten this burden that I'd carried around with me for so long out of the way. And so I came to them one night very tearful and told them that I had to talk to the bishop about something, and asked if I could make an appointment. I went in and talked to the bishop, and you know, looking at it now from my adult self perspective, I realized that he must have felt he just kind of was like, there, it's okay, you're fine, you know, don't do it again, and just gave me comforting advice. And I felt that burden lifted and was relieved that I'd gotten that out of the way. So anyway, I felt better after that point, but was very, very wary and of pornography. And I think at that point too, there's a lot of talks being given from the leadership about pornography, and that fed that feeling that it was really an awful thing that should be avoided at all costs.
And this was a one-time event then for you, this 9-year-old event.
It was. It was it was a one-time thing, but okay. Left a big impression.
Yeah, and I was going to ask, looking back, how much do you think that was affected by Mormonism versus, you know, a 9-year-old maybe being embarrassed about a naked body or sexuality, or
that's a good,
which is hard to probably know, but
good question. And I think it, at the beginning when I was in the 9 or 10 stage, it probably really was a lot more just being young and seeing a naked body and feeling kind of shame and uneasy about it. But then I think by the time I was getting my patriarchal blessing, the message about pornography was being delivered so often from the pulpit that at that point, it had a lot more to do with Mormonism because I could label it as that, I'd say.
And then it sounds like the bishop wasn't shaming or didn't make a huge deal about it, in a sense was reassuring and helped you liberate yourself from this guilt or this shame that you were carrying all these years?
In a way, there was no discussion about the particular event. What I wish he would have said, you know, like, it's normal, because I still felt like I had done something really wrong, but I did feel forgiven. So in that sense, yes, it was liberating, and I felt a lot better afterwards.
Right. So nobody was telling you this wasn't really a big deal. This was a normal curiosity. This shouldn't even be something you should be necessarily repenting from. It was more like, yes, this is something bad, and thank you for telling me, and now go on. And
exactly. Exactly.
Be merry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay. And so then, were there any other situations as far as other family members or friends or anything else that was happening at the time for you as far as pornography was concerned? I guess I'm just trying to give you any opportunity to talk about anything that happened prior to meeting Ben and having a marriage with Ben that would have set the stage for your views on pornography.
Yeah. So the other incident that affected how I feel about it was that my older brother, who I really looked up to and idolized in a lot of ways, he's 2 years older than I am. And in high school, my parents had found out that he had been looking at pornography, which I don't think was anything unique, because it was my generation really that was introduced to internet pornography totally unsupervised, because, you know, I don't think a lot of parents were tuned in to it at this point. But my parents did find out that my brother had been looking at pornography or ordering movies on cable or something like that. And I had found out that that was the case, and I was pretty devastated for my brother, feeling like if he didn't get this under control or get his addiction under control, that his life would be ruined. And again, all the talks from the pulpit, I remember writing my brother a letter and quoting President Hinckley in it and pleading with him to not look at pornography and to prepare himself for his mission, and to stay on the straight and narrow path type of a message, because I was so concerned about him. And my parents did find, through LDS services, they found a Sexaholics Anonymous, some kind of a meeting group that they had him go to for several sessions. I'm not sure how long it lasted. So it was a big deal for our family. It kind of sent ripples through all of us, I think.
How did it become knowledge of the family? In other words, why wasn't this something that was maybe being more addressed just between the parents and your brother?
Well, I think that it's my mom, because she doesn't like to keep secrets, and she is very open personality. And I think it was kind of like a war on Satan, a war against Satan in our home. Like, we were all trying to fight it together, kind of a thing. So she was pretty open about it. I don't remember ever sitting down and, like, it wasn't a family discussion, but one-on-one, she was very open with each one of us, I think, about what was happening. And
maybe in a way using your brother's example as a warning to not get involved in this type of thing yourselves or for your other siblings?
Yeah, a warning, and also to kind of rally around him and to pray for him and be
supportive.
Yeah.
And is this the first time then that this addiction language started permeating your concept of pornography and this idea that this could be something that get out of control for people?
Yeah, totally. This is when, yep.
Not that you can speak for your brother, obviously, but are you comfortable sharing anything as far as how that ended for him? Was going to these sexaholic groups helpful for him?
No. In fact, I think it did a lot of damage. Now, if you talk to him about it, and I have several times, he talks about how, you know, he maybe looked at pornography once a month or once or twice a month and felt terrible about it right afterwards. You know, it's a whole shame cycle. He beat himself up about it, but then would go back to it a while later. But he describes standing with this group of people in these meetings where other members would stand up and talk about how they were addicted to prostitutes, not at all on the same level as looking at a little, you know, erotica on the computer once or twice a month. They were seriously unhealthy people. And for him to be put in with those other people did a lot of damage, I think.
Right. So introducing him to a lot more material and information that he didn't really need to come across.
Right. And I think he describes just feeling like, why am I here? You know, like he would say, I looked at pornography a couple times last month, and everyone would just kind of look at him like, that's it. So
was this in a Mormon-esque type geographical place that you were living at the time?
Yeah, we were in Sandy, Utah. So, okay. And I'm certain that it was through LDS services.
It sounds like he wasn't necessarily buying into the fact that he was at the same level as of dysfunction as some of the other people he was seeing, that he could see himself differently.
True. Yeah.
Whereas I've heard people go to these groups and kind of just say, well, I'm just as bad, or my, you know, there's no spectrum. There's an inability to kind of have a spectrumed approach to whatever behavior is happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Ben, what about you? How did pornography become something that you were aware of, and kind of your story about it?
So I think it was either, I don't know, 13 or 14 years old. It was at my birthday party, sleepover, and one of the kids showed up with a VHS tape that he'd gotten from his older brother. And don't remember exactly how that got brought up. It was kind of an eclectic group of friends, but he said he was going to put it on. And initially, I actually went into another room because even then I knew that you weren't supposed to look at porn. So at first, I went into a different room to try to avoid it, but I could still hear it, and curiosity got the better of me, so I went back and watched this VHS at my birthday party, and that was the first time I was introduced. And then it was just kind of sporadic for the next few years. I mean, that was, I guess, 1993, 94, so it was at least a few years before internet was prevalent in most homes. And so every now and again, a different friend would have maybe HBO or something, and could find, you know, some softcore porn or something on that. But I guess it was getting closer to high school where I think we had our first computer in the house. And again, it was usually through friends, acquaintances, relatives, that somebody had shown me how to look it up, and somebody else had shown me how to delete the history and try to cover your tracks. And so it was kind of piece by piece. And I guess probably similar to Jen's brother, it wasn't ever anything that stopped me from living a normal day-to-day life. My parents never knew. I've got three sisters. Nobody in my family knew until just a few years ago when I told them, just for the sake of trying to be more open and honest. So yeah, it was just occasionally every few months or something. And then I'd hear the word addiction, and I guess I thought at the time that that did apply to me, because even though I could still carry on normal day-to-day activities, I thought, well, I told myself I'd never look again, and whoops, I looked again, so I guess I'm addicted. And felt like I fell into that category because of that.
Because it's something I'm not wanting to do, or I'm trying to stop, and I seem to get back to it.
Exactly, yep. I know I'm not supposed to. I feel terrible afterwards, but yet I do it again. So I've got some kind of problem. And I think one of the first times that I think getting interviewed for a temple recommended to go to baptisms for the dead. And I remember breaking down and crying when it was a counselor asked me if I obeyed the law of chastity. And I said no in tears. And he said, well, this is where I'll stop the interview with you, and you can talk to the bishop from here. But yeah, there's a tremendous amount of guilt and shame that went along with it. My parents even gave me the opportunity to baptize my youngest sister when I was, I think you have to be a priest, so I must have been at least 16. And I think I gave them some excuse of I didn't feel comfortable because maybe she'd be sad that Dad baptized the rest of us and he didn't baptize her. But really, in my mind, I was thinking I wasn't worthy and it wasn't something I should do. So it started permeating my self-perception, I guess, in a way.
So seeing yourself as broken, seeing yourself as there's something wrong with me.
Correct, yeah.
Seeing yourself as a potential or possible even addict.
Yep.
Not in control of your own behavior.
Exactly.
And this is with looking at porn maybe every few months or every few weeks?
Yeah, probably usually closer every few months, I'd say.
Okay. Do you mind if I ask you a bit about masturbation? Was that going on for you? And was that tied to this in any way, shape, or form? Or did you see those two things kind of differently or separately?
No, I don't mind at all. Yeah, it was tied directly with it. Well, most times, if I was by myself, I would masturbate while I looked at pornography. If I was with buddies, we wouldn't masturbate in front of each other or anything when we were sharing websites or watching something on TV. But yeah, by myself, if I was by myself and looking at pornography, I masturbated along with it.
And I'm guessing there was masturbation, though, more often than every 3 months. So you didn't need pornography to masturbate, or?
No, actually, I don't recall ever masturbating when I was younger without pornography. I do know that when Jen and I started talking about this just a few years ago, as we started trying to tackle it from a different perspective, I decided to try masturbating without it. And granted, this is, you know, now as a 30-year-old, after only having masturbated to pornography, and it just didn't work for me, so.
Okay, but, so your experience, they were very much tied. The times that you would look at pornography were the only times that you would masturbate.
Correct.
Okay.
Maybe a few times when I was younger than 18, but nothing that I can specifically recall.
So then what ended up happening for you then? How did the bishop respond to you, and how did you keep going as far as your Mormon timeline, right? So you're getting these responsibilities of possibly baptizing your sister or going to the temple or preparing for a mission. How did that all go for you?
My memory is pretty foggy on a lot of things, and Jim makes fun of me all the time for that, but I don't recall specifically what the bishops that I talked to, if they really listed any sort of corrective action, or it was usually just they'd ask me, I don't know, maybe how often or when the last time was, and they'd just say, you know, you don't do it again. But I don't know that I ever got, I mean, definitely nothing disfellowship, but I don't even know if there's a lesser grade of that for
like
young
if you
kids.
Pass the sacrament,
yeah, or... I was never really blacklisted from participating in my priesthood activities. And maybe that's because it was only every few months. I'm not sure. And so as it got closer to my mission, I know, I think I doubled the effort and I just went even longer. I don't know, maybe a year or so before my mission. I couldn't tell you specifically, but then I didn't look at all during my mission. When I came home, I don't know how long it was after I got home from my mission that I looked again, probably within a year. Would be my guess, but I stayed pretty busy. I went straight into some undergrad studies, and I was playing and traveling a lot. And so it was never anything consistent or regular.
Okay, so back to possibly every few months.
Yeah, probably.
And Jen, do you mind if I ask the same question of you as far as masturbation? Was that an experience that you had at all?
No.
Okay.
No, I really, well, other than, I guess, when my friend showed me the pornography, there maybe was some touching at that point, but it wasn't ever a regular thing or anything that I would have even thought about.
So there really wasn't any sexual release that you felt you needed as a teenager or really explored that aspect of yourself at all?
No.
Do you even remember thinking about it? Like it was no big deal, or you were not doing it because you were trying not to do it?
I think I just related it only to the boys. I think I remember reading the Strength of Youth pamphlet, and if I ever heard the word masturbation, I just figured it was for the men. I didn't even know that women could do it. I was really naive.
Sure. Okay. We're probably at the point in the timeline then when the two of you are starting to meet and date and looking at getting married. So can you tell me a little bit about...
It was really quick.
Yeah, was it?
About that fast.
Well, and we tried to, like I said, we tried dating in high school. That didn't work out. So we didn't talk for a few years. When she got home from her mission, I wanted to date her then, and she decided to date my other buddy instead. So then again, we parted ways for a while she pursued his path, and that didn't work out. So then we came, met up again at a New Year's Eve party and started dating. So, and we were married in April, so 4 months later.
Yeah, it was like we went on a date on New Year's Eve, and he was in Logan, and I was in Provo. So we went on maybe two or three more dates, and then we were engaged and then married within a couple months.
What was that time like for the two of you? Were you the type of couple that had a hard time keeping your hands off each other, or were you pretty strict about what you could or couldn't do together before marriage, or how did you manage your sexual energy as you were dating?
That's a good question.
That was kind of tough. We were fairly physical. I probably pushed the limits enough that she felt a little guilty. We never...
There was never anything that made us feel like we couldn't get sealed in the temple.
There's never any contact with genitals. It was just kind of, I don't know, I guess what the church would call heavy petting, maybe.
Yeah.
But
how are you that?
Not under the clothes, I don't know.
You gotta love heavy petting.
Yeah. I did then. Now it's kind of boring. Yeah.
If only it could be that exciting.
And did both of you have any prior sexual experiences other than you mainly had with each other?
Just making out. I had a boyfriend in high school and we made out, but...
I never... So. We were both virgins on our wedding night.
Yeah.
I never had sex. I had been a little more promiscuous than her, mostly through the Mormon lens. I mean, just making out with different girls, but there had been a couple girls where either her shirt was off, or I guess the worst that ever got for me was the risk of sounding tacky. I got a hand job once. That was my most deviant experience before marriage.
Okay. And all throughout that, Ben, and even up until your marriage, this is continuing as far as you looking at porn every few weeks or months.
Yeah, probably for the most part. I think it was maybe similar to my mission that is like, well, of course, we only dated for 4 months. So it couldn't have been a year. But, and I had discussed with her when we really started getting serious dating, and I told her that I had had issues with pornography and masturbation in the past, just trying to offer full disclosure, but that I hadn't for, I don't know, for at least a while and didn't plan on doing it again.
What was that like to hear, Jen, that he has quote-unquote issues with pornography?
I don't remember him phrasing it in a way that made me panic at all. I don't remember that at all. Maybe I was just so excited to get married. I didn't even register.
You don't remember the discussion at all?
I don't. I don't really remember the discussion, which would be unusual for me, but...
When we were down in St. George walking back to that house we were staying in, I think I prefaced it with a terrible joke about not being a virgin, thinking, well, maybe if I start with something worse and then pornography and masturbation won't sound so bad. I don't know. But
I don't know.
Interesting.
I don't remember it being a red flag.
What were you thinking, Ben, as you told her? Were you worried or scared that it might be a deal breaker?
Not that I recall, no. I think we've been pretty honest with each other, and I thought that I probably maybe overplayed it, that it wasn't a problem anymore at that point, but it had been in the past, maybe. I don't remember being scared to bring it up.
And at that point, my brother, I felt like had been kind of cured. I kind of was less, maybe, I don't know. I wasn't any less scared of pornography, but I did maybe feel like you could overcome it. Thinking that my brother had overcome it, not knowing that he really hadn't. So maybe I was less worried if he told me that, thinking that he was okay because my brother had done the same thing and, you know, you could be
curious.
Yeah, I trusted that it wasn't a problem.
Okay. Okay, so you get married, and all is lovely and wonderful, right? And so how does this issue start coming up again for the two of you?
So we've talked about that as she wrote her story down when we tried to come up with more specific times, and it was the same kind of thing. It'd be a year with nothing, and then for whatever reason, I'd look at pornography and automatically feel guilty, but I wouldn't right away go to her and tell her. So that became the issue, because it'd been a few years, and even though it was only a few times in those few years, when she did find out that there had been a few times, that, you know, I wasn't being fully honest.
Well,
of course, that's my side, but
yeah, the way I remember it, I thought it was done, over, taken care of. You know, that, yeah, that it was a before the mission thing. I remember maybe one confession pretty soon after we were married, where he said he looked at something and I just said, you know, this cannot happen. And he was very remorseful and resolved to never do it again. And I just trusted that and thought, you know, okay, this is not something I have to think about. It's overdone, not going to be an issue. And then it was after we'd been married for 7 years and living in Michigan, and I was pregnant with my third baby, that we got to talking one night and he confessed that he had looked at pornography kind of throughout our marriage. And at that point, I didn't think to ask how many times, like, how many times are we talking here? I never asked that. I never asked what he had looked at. It was just full blown panic.
So in other words, this person has been lying to me. This is a bigger issue than I had originally thought. Where did your panic brain go? Is this going to destroy our marriage, or this he's an addict, or what did you think?
Yes, this is going to destroy our marriage and he's going to have an affair. That was the biggest thing. Like, it's just a matter of time before this turns into an affair. And, you know, my panic brain was saying, I was asking the question, well, should I just end this now? Because it'd be better to end it now than to go years and years down the road and have it be, you know, snowball, get bigger and bigger and be more of a mess to try and get out of. And, you know, I think it just, all of the talks over the pulpit, all of the Relief Society lessons, all of the, you know, everything is just, it's a big black hole. You start looking at pornography and then your life falls apart. It, one goes hand in hand with the other. And it was really brutal for him to admit that to me, and the response that I had was so intense.
So it was an intense betrayal.
Yeah, an intense betrayal, and I don't really know what a woman experiences when her husband cheats on her, has an affair, but I imagine it has to be pretty similar, because I went through all the self-loathing and feeling like I was ugly, and the reason why he was looking is because he wasn't satisfied with me, and just all of those. They ran the gamut of the emotions, and it was really an awful time.
Yeah, I'm sure. So up until this disclosure, what was the quality of your relationship like? I'm sure you had ups and downs, like most couples, but would you say you were in a fairly healthy marriage, or getting along fairly well, or were there chronic issues?
Oh, we've always been really compatible. We've been really grateful for that, because we didn't give ourselves a lot of time to figure that out. But we complement each other pretty well, so there's not a lot of fighting.
Well, then whether to squeeze the toothpaste tube from the middle or the back, I mean, yeah, that's about our biggest fight.
Little things. There was a lot of stress up, kind of off and on throughout our marriage, just like financial and moving. We moved like 8 times in 8 years.
4 of which were cross country.
Yeah. And then we're trying to have babies on top of getting him trained to be a pilot, which was really stressful.
It still is, but...
Yeah, it's still stressful, but...
Other than finances and little trivial things, no, I think we have a pretty good relationship.
Yeah.
I guess I asked that because you were, you know, in this moment that you're describing, considering a possible separation or even divorce, that might be the best course of action for you, even though other than this problem, it sounds like you had a fairly good and supportive and healthy relationship together.
Which is exactly why we're willing to talk about it.
So there's other people.
Because it seems so absurd looking back on it now, but
granted that's just our opinion on
it. Yeah. But that yes, the reaction was so conditioned that I feel like it was completely out of proportion.
And Ben, what was it like for you on your end as you're disclosing this? Why did you disclose it? What did you perceive her reaction and then your own reaction to be?
I don't know that I'd ever felt so much frustration with myself up until that point. Someone that I love so much, seeing her in that much pain, knowing that I was the cause of it. I mean, remorse, sorrow, I could list off a dozen synonyms or adjectives, but yeah, I felt terrible. I was completely submissive to whatever she wanted to do. I just thought that I ruined the greatest part of my life over something so what should have been unimportant and insignificant, but it was my fault because I let it continue to creep up, even though I told myself not to.
So it sounds like you were scared for the fact that you might lose your wife, that this might actually break up your marriage. Is that something that you were scared of at that time?
Yeah. Yeah, and if I remember right, I think I left on a 4-day trip the very next day and had to go on the road for 4 days. And I mean, we tried to talk on the phone, but that wasn't, I mean, there was way too much going on to adequately communicate over the phone.
So I just want to pause for a minute and just kind of discuss a few things with the audience, in the sense that I'm hoping to bring on couples, if they're willing, that kind of cover a gamut of experiences. And the story that you both have shared so far, I would say, is the highest proportional story that I get in my office. And by that I mean that there is some pornography usage by one of the partners that, of course, goes against the expectations and values of Mormonism. It is not super dramatic in use, right? So like you're saying, the frequency is maybe every few weeks or months, or I would say even every few days, but is not something that is causing financial hardship on the family, or that is happening compulsively, or that happening in ways kind of like you were talking about, Jen, with some of the experiences that your brother was hearing about. But it still falls in this category of unwanted, non-sanctified behavior in a Mormon marriage, and therefore it's a very big deal to both parties. And the betrayal is very high level. It's scary. It feels like, you know, all these things that we'll get into a little further as far as the impact that has. But it comes, from my clinical perspective, it comes nowhere near the frequency or the level of dysfunction that would be clinically concerning as far as the behavior itself. And so that's one story. But I also want to recognize that there are people, there are couples out there that are dealing with more serious frequency, more serious consequences, more serious betrayal. And therefore, I'm not trying to make your story kind of be a wide brush that I hope to bring different perspectives on. Having said that, let's talk then a little bit about where the two of you went from this particular day that you're describing, where the disclosure happened. What happened next? How did the two of you deal with it? What were some of the things that you were trying to manage?
My sister was living in Tennessee. I have an older sister that was living in Tennessee when this was happening. And she started listening to podcasts for Mormon stories. And she came across the podcast on pornography and sex and masturbation and had just barely listened to it when all this went down. I should back up. Because this first disclosure that Ben was talking about, there was about a 2-year time span between when he told me the first time and he was working for Discount Tire because he had been furloughed from his job as a pilot, which I actually considered to be a tender mercy at the time because he wasn't on the road. He said that he had left for a trip right after he told me, but that's actually the second time that he told me that he had looked at pornography. Because the first time when he was working for Discount Tire, I was glad that he wasn't on the road. And then my sister in Tennessee started listening to these podcasts.
So 5 years into marriage was when we were living in the townhouse and I told you.
Yeah, and he told me that he'd looked and it was devastating. But his mother, my mother-in-law, has a friend who's a therapist that sent us some materials to help us work through his addiction, what we thought was an addiction. So we
talked to her on the phone as well.
Yeah, we talked to her on the phone. So we started reading materials from LDS services on how to overcome pornography addiction, things like that. And we didn't find any of those to be helpful. They were actually pretty painful to try and work through because neither one of us was getting anything out of them other than just you needed to read your scriptures more and focus on your spirituality in order to resist temptation kind of advice. And it just wasn't applicable. It didn't feel like concrete solutions to a problem that we were facing. So that was really hard. And we gave up on that after a month or so of trying to read through the materials together. And
you both agreed that they weren't helpful, or was one of you wanting to continue and the other one was resistant to it?
No, I think we both agreed. And I remember feeling maybe similar to our brother at Sexaholics Anonymous, thinking, well, I mean, these are dealing with bigger issues than the one I'm looking at. It's not a compulsive behavior. It's not a behavior that's, I'm calling in sick from work in order to support this habit or something. That was more my take on it, I think, than I guess hers on it being
I think
big spiritual guidelines.
And I kind of felt like Ben just thought, oh, I can just turn it off. Like, I'll just stop. I think he had confidence in himself to just be able to not do it again.
I'm a slow learner. That's after 20 years of.
and so I was kind of, I felt like I was dragging him along, kind of making him play the part. An addict trying to boost their spirituality and all of that, where he was just like, I'm fine. I'm just not going to do it anymore. So we really didn't, neither one of us found it helpful. And then, and in between that time, from reading through the materials until the second big disclosure,
two years later,
he was recalled by the airlines and started to fly again, which really, really had me nervous because I knew he would be vulnerable being a pilot again. And I kind of laid it down for him that if he looked at pornography again while he was out on the road, then we would have to either reconsider his career as a pilot or reconsider our marriage. So that
ultimatum.
Yeah, kind of threw an ultimatum at him. And then it was at that point that he came to me again and confessed that he had looked at pornography on a trip and that's when I was really in despair. And that's when my sister told me about the podcast. And it happened to be like he left for a trip that morning. I found out about the podcast that afternoon and listened to it that same afternoon. And this particular podcast, it's not like it has anything revolutionary in it. It's just that it gave me the tools that I needed to be able to talk about it with him without using shame or
fear. Just looked at it from a perspective that neither one of us were familiar with at that point.
Yeah. Maybe looked at it as more of a normal behavior than one that was going to take you down only one path, which was self-destruction. Anyway, I called Ben. I told him to listen to the podcast and that we would talk about it when he got home from his trip. And that conversation was life-changing.
Wow. So Yeah, tell me more about that. What did that open up for the two of you in the sense of now we can maybe have a different discussion than we would have had otherwise?
When he got home from his trip and we had talked, we started talking about the podcast and what we had listened to, I let down my guard. I stopped looking at it like, you need to change this behavior or our marriage is over. And instead was just, I asked him, why? Why are you looking? And not like a judgment kind of why, but a sincere, what's happening when you get this desire, this craving? Are there triggers? You know, are there, trying to find some reason, I guess, besides a temptation.
So you got curious. You allowed for curiosity to take over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got curious. And
logic, too, I'd say.
Uh-huh.
Looking at it logically of what are the steps, you know,
yeah,
what leads up to it.
And even started asking, what do you feel when you're watching it? And what do you, I don't know. It's just like we were able to talk about everything from every aspect and it turned into almost like a scientific exploration of the process instead of this damning.
No, we weren't just afraid of it. It wasn't just something to be feared, but something to be discussed. No.
So prior to that, it seems like it was a lot of the meanings that you had ascribed to it. So in other words, this can destroy our marriage. This is a threat. This is an addiction. This is something that's going to take us over. You even mentioned more specifics for you, Jen, in the sense of, this is competition. This correlates to how much he loves me or how much he's committed to me or whether or not I'm attractive or desirable to him.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I'm lacking, right? If this is something that he's having to go to instead of coming to me. So with sexuality being very much about, I can be the only way that he can sexually express himself, which I think is a message we very much get in Mormonism, is that the only place sexuality
yeah.
can be expressed in a healthy way is through the spouse.
Yeah.
And now it sounds like there was new possibilities, new messages. So in other words, maybe this has to do more with sexuality or different brain aspects or libido or desire or fantasy or stress, you know, a coping mechanism or like what all did you find out about each other?
Well, a lot of things. And I have to say too, one of the other questions that I asked that I'd never thought to ask before was, what are you looking at? It never had occurred to me that there's this spectrum of, you know, that ranges from the hardcore stuff to just erotica. And I don't know. And it's kind of important, I guess, I decided to know what exactly is being looked at. And that, anyway, all those things that seem so obvious now that at the time it just barely had dawned on me that maybe it would be important to ask those things. What would you say? What did we learn about each other?
That's a good question. I guess I feel like I had less insight to offer in that conversation because you were the one with all the curiosities, and I tried as honestly as I could to express correct answers to your questions, but I don't. So what you asked, what leads to it? Usually it's just because I've got a couple hours to kill in my hotel room.
Yeah, I found out that it's mostly boredom. The trigger is boredom.
Yeah. I was bored with nothing else to do. And the fact that the sexual release sounded more enticing than any other activities I could come up with sometimes.
And I learned that he still loved me, that it wasn't his viewing of the pornography was not reflective of his love for me or lack of love for me, which was hard for me to believe, but I believe it now.
And what about even more than love, his sexual attraction to you?
Yeah, that too. I know you read a lot that consistent viewing of pornography can damage couples' sexual relationship and libido and things.
Erectile dysfunction.
Mm-hmm. It's never been a case, that has never been the case for us.
Yeah, and the few studies on that, it's you know, it takes about 10 hours a day to kind of get to the erectile dysfunction level, and even that's not for sure correlation. And I think most of the distress that happens for most couples has to do with the dishonesty piece, or the sense that we haven't really contracted our sexuality well together. We're not in agreement of how we're going to engage with sexuality in our relationship. And so, of course, that's very distressful.
Yeah. And from that conversation that we had after we listened to that podcast, the takeaway, what we decided to do was that I said, I am no longer going to tell you not to do it. I'm not going to be controlling of that. I'm not going to be, but I do want to know. I want full disclosure, knowing that with that full disclosure, I won't panic. I won't freak out. I won't, you know, but that we kind of explore it together and talk about what led up to it. If it was a positive experience, if it was not a positive thing, and just to try and try it out from a different perspective, because the one we had been coming at it from was causing so much pain.
So you really stepped away from a policing role into more of a, I'm expecting honesty role.
Completely.
And this is the podcast you're referring to. Is this the podcast with Dr. Stephanie Buehler and I think myself and John DeLynn that we were talking about the effects of pornography for Mormon marriages?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
So thanks for that podcast.
I'm so glad it was helpful. Goodness.
So are we.
So, Ben, what was this like for you? I mean, you're going from this moment of disclosure and seeing the anguish for your wife and feeling, you know, so low and base in a sense yourself to getting this kind of directive from her to, hey, listen to this podcast and an invitation to have a very different dialogue. What was that process like for you?
Well, I'd say it was probably one of the more liberating experiences of my life. I no longer had to feel like a terrible person, feel like I was second only to murderers, you know, extrapolating the scripture from the Book of Mormon, but that I wasn't a lost cause and that this is something that we could just try to explore more open-mindedly to decide for ourselves, aside from eternal expectations, what we wanted to do with the situation.
And what meaning was going to be ascribed to it was more in your hands then.
Correct.
And that idea that you were second to a murderer, was that something that really was something you thought of as you were growing up and kind of dealing with this issue?
Sure. Yeah. Every time I read that scripture, I'd think, I forget exactly how it's phrased, but sexual sins. And I thought, well, for sure this falls under sexual sins, so there isn't anything worse I could do except deny the Holy Ghost or shed innocent blood. So there's definitely something wrong with me. And that, maybe that's what kept me only doing it every, you know, few weeks or few months as opposed to more regularly. But regardless, that's, I think, such an unhealthy way to try to change someone's behaviors.
Well, and I just want to go back to me, what's so incredibly tragic about your story, which, again, I've seen over and over and over again, is that by most, I guess, measurements today, the two of you were very sexually naive. The two of you were very sexually inexperienced. There's really no promiscuity or huge levels of sexual experience and lived very chaste lives. I think, you know, as far as other cultures, people in the United States would view the two as very chaste and innocent and pretty much having most of your sexual experiences as a couple. And yet the two of you are feeling like there's something really, really wrong and that your marriage is possibly on the brink of failing. I mean, it's just so profound how just the psychology of it, you know, and what we can kind of talk ourselves into or have a culture pressure us into, because it's the systemic problem that we have that all of us are affected by.
Yeah, yep. Indeed.
Tell me a little bit more then about where you're at today and how this shift then has affected your sexuality as a couple how you have felt about yourselves moving forward from that particular kind of juncture in your lives.
I think that was just the tip of the iceberg. I think our perspective has shifted, and most of the decisions we make and the way we live our life, no longer are we trying to choose between good and evil or right and wrong. We're just trying to be healthy. That's our new goal, be healthy and be honest and trying to assess if what we're doing is healthy or not and strive to improve.
Yeah, and to educate ourselves in a lot of ways. I think listening to that podcast, yes, it was the tip of the iceberg, and then it just kind of led me to listen to a lot more, to kind of research addiction and think about pornography a lot more and what it really means in the spectrum of pornography addiction. And anyway, we're not too concerned about it these days. So I think we both feel like we're in a place that's healthy for each of us. Ben still travels 3 or 4 days out of most weeks. I'd say that we have a healthy sexual relationship.
I'd say so too.
That's great. What would you say is your current relationship with pornography like?
Again, in our, I guess speaking for myself, I just view it as something I actually find helps me feel better in many ways, like exercising, for lack of a better comparison. Like I said, I tried masturbating as this whole process started taking place, and I was saying, well, you know, it feels good to have a sexual release, you know, every couple of days, and when I'm gone for 4 or 5 days, and that can't happen. Well, so I tried masturbating without pornography. That didn't work. So, yeah, for me, it's, I feel healthier and I feel all around better when I have a sexual release every couple of days. And when I'm on the road, that usually involves looking at pornography. Like we said, on the spectrum of erotic and hardcore, it's usually just erotic, just enough to, for arousal and sexual release. But I don't know that matters as much. So anyway, I guess the straightforward answer is we've embraced pornography as a tool to help us feel healthy.
Part of the whole process of exploring it and learning about it over these past few years for me has been to view it. I never did, you know, since I was 9 years old with my neighbor, I didn't really look at anything. And then when all of this went down and we listened to that podcast, it was kind of one of my resolves was to familiarize myself with what really was out there. And being kind of afraid that if I did that, I could never go back. Like I would be an addict too. That was not the case. But I felt like it was important that I knew what it was, what I was even afraid of.
And has it become something that you sexually enjoy as well, or something that you're just more comfortable saying it's part of our contract that my husband sexually enjoys this?
On occasion, pretty rarely, I'll watch something, but I don't need it. And I have mixed feelings about it. You know, I do worry about the ethics of it and not knowing where it's coming from and worrying about the women involved. And, you know, I definitely have concerns that way, but also recognizing the fact that there are women who, I know there are women who enjoy the work, and I don't know, I just have so many mixed feelings about the whole thing. It's so complicated.
Right. It's not as black as white as we'd like to make it.
Not at all.
For some, it's actually very empowering work and healing work, and for others, it's very objectifying or even to the point of feeling taken advantage of.
Right, and the stigma that goes along with it, you know, nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody likes to talk about it. Nobody likes to admit that they could enjoy it.
At some level, sexuality and its expression has been around forever. I mean, we have more access to it today. We have different types of access to it, you know, obviously with the creation of the video camera. Mm-hmm. But sexuality has been expressed in literature and in drawings and in art and in poetry and music for ever since we've existed ourselves.
Right. Yeah, and I've had some feedback from people with just writing my story and being willing to talk about it, that these things are too personal to share, and that I don't know. There's the whole part of Mormonism where you have secret versus sacred, and gets kind of confusing as to what's okay to talk about and what's not okay to talk about. And even on my mission, you have the white handbook where it tells you not to talk about past transgressions with the people that are investigating the church, you know, even if you could possibly relate to them, which always kind of bothered me. But I felt like it's important to talk about this, I think, because I think it's such a common thing. And I know, you know, just from talking to people that I know that they're going through the exact same thing in their marriages, and the women are just reeling because they don't have anyone to talk about it with. And anyway, I think it's a real problem. I think we need to talk about it. So that's why we're willing to talk about it. Cause then, you know, if someone's judgmental about it, I kind of feel like they're just not being honest.
Yeah. And those, I think those are decisions that everybody has the right to make for themselves. If somebody feels like that's too private to talk about, that's absolutely fine. And if others feel like, no, we're comfortable putting ourselves out there and talking about these things, that's perfectly fine too. And
yeah.
I think that depending on your personality style and your, maybe even the risk that it might bring to you as far as how comfortable you are with a variety of things, you know, your job, your family, your community, that those decisions can be made from different spaces. I tend to agree that the more we talk and the more we share, the better off we tend to be as far as understanding human behavior, and that many of us are in similar boats and going through similar patterns, even if there's obviously individual uniqueness to each of our stories.
Mm-hmm.
So let's finish by maybe talking about, so now let you know, your parents, and you have kiddos yourselves, and I'm not exactly sure how old they are, but you know, you both mentioned starting this journey with pornography at very early ages yourselves, so 9, 13. And how do you see the trajectory being different for your kids as far as the messaging they might receive from you, or hopefully the overall culture, so that they can have a different story than the two of you had?
Yeah, I think when we talk about it with our kids, we just come from that angle of, look, just try to pay attention to what feels healthy and what doesn't. Just like when you eat too much candy, you probably don't feel good. Well, there's types of pornography that aren't healthy, and pay attention to how you're feeling. If you don't feel good, it's not a good idea, but that it's very, very normal to want to understand your own sexuality better. And this is one of the many forms out there to explore sexuality. And if you're interested, you don't have to feel like you're a bad person if you do see something. And if you see something you don't understand, you can always talk to us. That's kind of the angle we try to take.
Yeah, we're very clear with no shaming. We tell, our oldest is 10 and he's our son. And we've been very open with him about talking about sex and bodies, and we've given him a book that he can look at that has a lot of, it's like a question and answer type book. And in my conversations with him, we try to focus on health, and I've tried to relate it to how there's an age that they've done studies that's best. I try to relate it to alcohol, not for lack of a better comparison, because we know that a person's brain is best equipped to handle drinking at around the age of 21. And that's why it's the legal age, I guess. And so we've tried to relate that to sex, in that there's a certain age when your body will be best able or ready for something like that. And it's not now, it's later. So, but not to shame exploration. And again, we've given him this book with the question and answers, but I feel like that's the best we can do for now. I approach it from a healthy angle.
Kind of keep stigma out of it.
Yeah, and shame. No shame, but just try to be smart about it and
keep communication
open. Yeah, and not to be afraid to talk to us
if such a thing is possible.
Right. Yeah, and even I think a really wonderful thing that we can all practice as parents is how to talk about concerns in non-shaming ways, right? So, for example, you don't even need pornography. You can just see the beer commercial, right, with many women in bikinis and maybe more sexualized than the men are portrayed, and you can have a discussion about that. You know, like, so what messages do we have in our culture? What value do we place on attractiveness? You know, what value do we place for women versus men around their sexuality? And so there's some concerns that can come up and some, you know, issues that you can discuss, but not from the sense of don't look at that. It's bad that you want to look at that, or that there's something evil in and of itself about that. I think we can be guiding a good, healthy conversation with good information, and some of the messages aren't the best, or, you know, pornography is a form of sexual expression, but it's not necessarily correct sexual education, right? It's not necessarily going to be exactly that way when you have sex. You know, it's kind of like the movies, right? When you see a car chase on the movies, it's not exactly the same as maybe seeing the police going after somebody in real life, right? So those are conversations that we can have without the piece that you're mentioning that's so important, which is that there's something either wrong with you or there's something wrong with what you're doing in the sense that it now defines you versus why might this be concerning or what do you think about it or what are other people or what are your friends saying about this kind of stuff, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Good points.
Well, this has been really helpful and so great to have the two of you come on and talk about something again that you personally lived through. I guess I just want to give you both an opportunity to give your closing thoughts or anything maybe that I didn't ask you that you want to make sure you cover in a nutshell. What you feel has been so eye-opening or helpful or healing as far as shifting from this we're broken or we're scared or we're addicts to more of a what is normative human behavior about and like and why do we act the way we do? I guess I just want to mention that, you know, Ben, you said, yeah, this is behavior I wanted to stop, so why wouldn't it be an addiction? And yet there's all kinds of things that we do on a daily basis. I mean, I bite my nails, people eat food incorrectly. We all cope in both healthy and unhealthy ways on a pretty regular basis. And that's kind of part of the human story. So anyway, just give you an opportunity to share your closing thoughts.
He gestured to me.
Ladies first.
Ladies first.
Oh, you know, I just don't like the fear. I just don't think that fear is a good way to approach anything. And, you know, and because this is specific to pornography, I just, my hope, my conclusion would be that couples that find themselves in situations similar to ours would be empowered to not be afraid and to be able to communicate openly and honestly and not throw away something that is something over something so trivial, I guess. You know, I feel like, again, we're super compatible. I'm really happy to be with Ben and was willing to overlook all the good things just because of this one issue. And that seems like a tragedy that I would want to avoid and want other people to be able to avoid. So that's why we share.
Yeah, no, that's great. And maybe I would ask you one more question, Jen, which is what would you say about your own feminine sensuality and sexuality as a wife? And how, I mean, has that been hindered by the fact that your husband still looks at pornography, or how have you reframed that for yourself?
Maybe I had to go through my own process of deciding being more aware of my own libido and being so naive about it all for so long. I don't know. I feel like that's like a whole other podcast.
Right, because it doesn't seem like you feel threatened by it at this point.
No, not at this point. No. But I've had to work through it, you know.
Dealing with your own anxieties or more meanings about what this means.
And yeah, and not having it be reflective of my own worth, like not feeling like I was less than because I didn't, because I don't look like a porn star, I guess. Like, I don't know if that...
Right, the comparison.
Yeah. Does that answer your question?
No, I just think it's such a... It's also a liberating thing, I believe, for women to be able to give themselves permission to separate that sexual piece from their husbands. That, you know, if my husband's attracted to somebody else, or if my husband is attracted to pornography, or is my husband has a fantasy that I have no interest in sharing, right? Or whatever that is, whatever the husband brings to the table that's part of his sexuality, that does not have to threaten us.
Right.
We can still have a very connective, lovely relationship, and even a very sensual and sexual one that we contract and that we negotiate. But I don't have to be the end-all, be-all that I think our culture oftentimes gives, not just Mormon culture, but I think overall culture tells women, you know, your values and how sexy and attractive you are, and that we can really reject that.
Mm-hmm.
And husbands can be attracted to a lot of things and still want to have sex and hot sex with their wives, and often want that, you know, if the relationship is going well.
Yeah. I think that even just being able to appreciate anything that's beautiful, not just a body, a physical body, but I think that's maybe one of the ways that I got over that was to realize that there are lots of things that I think are beautiful or valued. Not that it's, maybe I'm getting off on a tangent, like erotic, but just
not sexual in nature.
Yeah, not sexual in nature, but we can both look at, I don't know, like a model or somebody that's just incredibly beautiful and appreciate that beauty, but not feel threatened by it. Like, yeah, I'm not just, again, with a lot of things.
That process of maybe maturing into our own self-confidence and our own adulthood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, Ben, what closing thoughts would you leave us with?
Just, I guess, communication and honesty, I think, are the key to working through anything, I guess, this included.
Yeah, so I'm telling you these are your closing thoughts, and then I'm just asking more questions, so I apologize. But so you mentioned that, you know, at that juncture time when Jen invited you to answer questions in a different way, in a sense she was inviting you to an honest relationship with her. And although we oftentimes have that intention or want to do that, that can be difficult to really be honest and start saying things like, oh yeah, I did look at porn last night. I want you to know that that's what I did, or, you know, whatever it is that you negotiate. So can you tell me a little bit about what it was like to go into that for you as far as being more honest and just forthcoming about, this is what I desire, this is what I like, this is what I feel will be helpful to me, and I'm willing to be honest with you about that?
Yeah, it definitely was not easy. It might be one of the, I know I keep speaking in absolutes and I actually hate absolutes, but it might be one of the harder things I've had to do that took more courage and bravery to offer the full disclosure and completely come clean, as it were, just because then you put the ball in their court and it's up to them to decide what to do with that information, and you leave yourself exposed and vulnerable. And that's where, as opposed to the guilt and shame I felt more as a teenager, I think, at least looking back on it retrospectively now, I think that was the harder part, knowing that I hadn't been honest the fact that I hadn't told her all along meant that I wasn't being completely honest. So yeah, it was very difficult.
But then it shifted so that there wasn't shame.
Right, so that, yeah, it did shift that day, that after the podcast, it shifted to no longer being a dark place, but a place out in the open where we could just discuss it.
Mm-hmm. And did it take some time to get used to that, to just disclosing, or was it pretty much right away that that happened for you?
I remember feeling slightly uncomfortable the first couple times because, I don't know, maybe some fear in me was saying, well, she told me that it wouldn't be a big deal, but is it going to be a big deal?
Right. Like, you're so still in that new territory together.
There was some fear that it might still come with heavier ramifications, but...
Mm-hmm. And yet you're selling that as your closing thought, so you're convinced that it was the right thing to do and to kind of get through that discomfort, and it was worth it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And would you both say that your intimacy then is higher now or than it was before you were dealing with all these things?
I was going to say definitely, but then he hesitated, so now I'm worried. No, I'm just kidding. I think so.
I feel like our intimacy never lacked to begin with. So, I mean, it's maybe more varied, or
it's more honest.
The intimacy, I guess, is hard to quantify, but I definitely feel like we're closer to each other and we love each other for who we are, both the good sides and the bad sides, more than we ever did before. We aren't playing parts anymore. We're not trying to fulfill a role for one another. We're being ourselves, and ourselves luckily complement each other.
Yeah, and we're choosing to be with each other. That's for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's a resounding yes, and because I think intimacy is a lot more than just what your sex life looks like, right? So
yeah,
it's that sense of, can I show up and feel accepted? Do you have my back? And do my weaknesses mean that we're over, right? Or can we work on our weaknesses, but not necessarily have our weaknesses be the end all be all of how we define each other or ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Right.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again so much for coming on. This has been a wonderful discussion.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for helping save our relationship.
Oh, wow.
That's true.
Thanks for saying that. That's very meaningful.
We took the long road home, turned minutes into miles. And as the evening traveled on, the sunset bathed your smile. We stopped beneath the desert stars, wrapped in each other's arms. Was as simple as I love you, an ordinary, extraordinary truth.
It's been a long road here, a trail with tears, pain and sorrow too. But through every storm like lovers do. And if sometimes we fell apart, we always
came back home was as simple as I love you. An ordinary, extraordinary some people say, love is blind and forever is too long. But I see your eyes in every sunrise. Can't imagine life alone. Till we're gone, watch you by my side till the day I die and into the beyond. It's as simple as our love is. That's how I wanna go. Extraordinary, it's nothing ordinary love. Ordinary, no, it's extraordinary.